You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
A woman wrapped in a black hijab that covers every part of her except her eyes and hands, an angry youth wearing a vest of explosives, a group of men chanting religious slogans, pumping their fists. Backwards, terrorists, fundamentalists. These are words and images that have been used in the Western world to describe Arabs. However, the recent uprisings in North Africa and the Middle East, largely peaceful and secular, have shaken the perception and forced many Westerners to see Arabs in a new way. Haritin Sujusoy is a professor of history at St. Louis University in St. Louis, Missouri, and he joins us on the phone this morning to discuss this. Hello, Haritin.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very good. It's nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, too.
Now, we use a singular word to describe a wide range of people. When we say Arabs, who are we talking about?
Excellent question. I mean, indeed, we are talking about an extremely diverse people in one word. You know, first of all, let me mention, you know, we are talking about a group of people who speak a language that belongs to Afro-Asiatic family, language family, which is a cognate with the Semitic language that we know, for example, from Hebrew, from Syriac, and from Aramaic and other, you know, Semitic languages. These are ancient people speaking Arabic language in the region between Egypt all the way to the Fertile Crescent and the Arabian Peninsula in ancient and medieval times. And today, they actually spread from North Africa all the way to Iran. The only thing really that unites them in terms of who they are is really the, you know, Arabic language that we know from, for example, as a literary language. Although the dialect, the spoken Arabic language, is also extremely diverse from North Africa all the way to Iran. So these are the people who are talking about as Arabs. And one thing that I need to mention also in this junction is that ancient and medieval Arabic-speaking people used to refer to themselves as descendants of Ishmael, the son of Abraham, who is also the forefather of the, you know, the Hebrew people. So, you know, they'd like to define themselves within the Abrahamic, you know, family tree.
Haritin, there's a lot of confusion between Arabs and Muslims. Why is that? Why do we have that confusion?
Indeed, you know, this is a fantastic, even actually laughable, you know, laughable stereotype and misconception, because there are approximately 1.3 billion Muslims on the face of the earth. You know, belonging to a variety of Islamic, you know, sects and movements and trends. Arabic-speaking people, first of all, not all of them are Muslims. There are huge number of Arabic-speaking Christians. And two, Arabic-speaking people form only 300 million out of 1.3 billion Muslims. So they are portion of the Muslim, worldwide Muslim community, but they are definitely not, you know, not all Arabs are Muslims, and not all Muslims are, you know, are Arabs. So, but there is this confusion, you know, some of it really probably consciously done in order to, you know, stereotype and demean people, but the reality is that, you know, Arabs form only a portion of the global Muslim community. So you are asking me about the reasons why this is the case? You know, there are a couple of reasons. One of them is definitely medieval animosity, and actually the echoes of medieval animosity. But I will leave this aside for a moment because it is a, you know, it's a very tough and long subject. Maybe, perhaps in the future we'll talk about this alone. But also there is the 19th century Orientalism that, you know, after the colonial enterprises of the French and the British, there is this, you know, inclination toward, you know, stereotyping and demeaning the colonized people in some of the scholarship that were, you know, that was written about the Muslims and about the Arabs. And there is another issue, too, that, you know, that contributes to the stereotyping of the Arabs, is the oil crisis in the 1970s that brought into the fore, you know, the oil-producing Arab people and then, you know, created a backlash against them. And there is also another very important subject that we have to be mindful of is that the Arab-Israeli conflict and the pro-Israeli media and scholarship and politics again contributed actually to stereotyping the Arabic-speaking people as well. And since the there is another reason as well, the strategic importance of the Middle Eastern region, Arabic-speaking Middle Eastern region, always brought them to the fore in the international arena. And since we are talking about really conflict of interest and variety of people interested and polities interested in the region, there is also a reason for stereotyping of the Arabs. Finally, I'd like to mention the contribution of 9/11.
Hayrettine, I am very interested in hearing about the impact of 9/11 because I think that was a critical moment. You've described sort of an evolution really over the last half of the 20th century where we've moved from one stereotype to another, many of them very kind of negative towards people in the Arab world. How did 9/11 then impact that already very murky view of who this diversity of Arab people were?
Yes, indeed. It was an important moment, obviously. Since we have been talking about this stereotyping that is coming out of all the way from the 19th century onwards. Now, the terrorist attack in 9/11 done by, you know, particular individuals who were also Arabic-speaking with really a distorted understanding of Islam. So this gave really a weapon for those people who'd like to actually demonize even more the Arabic-speaking people to equate not only terrorism with being an Arab, but also, you know, terrorism with being a Muslim. So, you know, it is obviously you are talking about a, you know, a terrorist organization who does not distinguish between Muslim and non-Muslim and Arabic-speaking and non-Arabic-speaking and strike at will, you know, regardless of religion and language. But obviously this gave an, you know, opportune moment for those people who are already disposed to actually stereotype and demon the Arabic-speaking people to equate the Arabs with terrorism and with fundamentalism. But you know, the demonization of the Arabs obviously does not emanate only from 9/11. It is really a little bit long even before that. I mean, if you look at the Hollywood movies, you're gonna see, you know, a really heartbreaking image of the Arabs that is, you know, transpiring from these movies. And I can start from, you know, as old as actually early decades of the 20th century, but, you know, for the sake of brevity, even look at the most famous Hollywood movies, for example, like Ali Baba or Aladdin or True Lies, or if you go back to the 60s, for example, Samson against the Sheikhs, and, you know, if you go to the 70s, Happy Hooker Goes to Washington, what you are going to see in these movies are, again, camel riding, backward people, oil-rich savages, irrational human beings, and terrorists. And, you know, talking about 300 million people with this type of stereotypes, you know, you cannot explain it with sound judgment, with academia, with, you know, sound analysis. It is only just, you know, stereotyping and demeaning people.
It is really a stunning mass set of stereotypes that we've seen now. 2011, there have been mass demonstrations in North Africa and the Middle East. We've seen a completely different side of the Arab world. To what extent do you think this has penetrated the consciousness of people in the Western world and started to affect our view of Arabs?
Excellent question. And I am one of those people who are hopeful that actually, you know, the revolutions in the Middle East, in North Africa and in the Middle East right now, are really game changers. They have already changed the perceptions of a lot of the media. If you watch even actually the Fox News in the United States, CNN, you know, you can see that, you know, they realized, at least some of them realized that, you know, they had been missing something that they had to talk about, but they did not. That the Arabic-speaking people that we talk about as the Arab street, that, you know, crowded by irrational people who are prone either to violence or fundamentalism, who need to be kept in check with dictators, is not accurate. That, you know, there are women, there are students, there are professionals, there are social classes, and there are actually clashes among the social classes, and that people actually demand wages, better wages, demand jobs, demand dignity, and demand freedom and liberty. So I think it is trickling down into the, you know, media at large, and that we are starting to see in the media that, you know, people talking about the Arab, you know, Arabic-speaking people as really either classes, professions, individuals with human qualities rather than just lump sum, stereotype, vague, and ultimately subhuman beings.
Haritan, what lessons do you think we can take away with us from this opening in our view of who Arab people are?
You know, I think there are a lot of lessons that we can actually draw from the, you know, what is happening in the Middle East right now, that, you know, we have to spend a little bit more time and more money on those people who are actually providing us information about the Arabic speaking people, meaning the, you know, the correspondents and the, you know, and our links actually in the Middle East, that, you know, they need to go and talk with people, they need to go and live with people, and they need to go and actually observe the societies and the diversity of the, you know, of the society. The lessons that we should, you know, cultivate is really that when we talk about a group of people who are more than three, that we cannot really generalize, that there are extremely, you know, important distinctions, differences, and clashes among, you know, large groups of people that we should be aware of. That exactly the same situation with the Arabic-speaking people. We have to be, you know, mindful that there are women in the societies and they have their problems. We have laborers and labor organizations that they have their own agenda. We have students. We have professionals. Then, you know, every single one of them, you know, demands a different things from the political society. Once we pay attention to this group, we are going to see two things. One is that, you know, what we talk about as Islamic fundamentalism is actually an absurd proposal. There are obviously fundamentalist groups, some of whom are actually terrorists as well, that, you know, I do not mean to say, you know, they do not exist. They do exist, but they are and they have been marginal to the society. So once we actually shed our lights on the larger portions of the society, which is actually like any other society in the face of the earth, then we are going to be seeing ways for communication, ways for dialogue, and ways for better understanding.
Haritan, it's been great talking to you about this morning, and I hope this is a conversation that we can continue.
Thank you very much. Glad to be on.
Okay, take care now. I've been speaking with Haritan Ujesoy. He's a professor of history at St. Louis University in St. Louis, Missouri.